What is up? It is Tuesday night, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined as always by Pain User and In Control. And tonight, a special guest, as we've got a new guy in the middle. Might look a little strange because he's a Terran. So yes, two Terrans tonight, as we got DeMuslim replacing Idra. Hello, sir. How are you? Welcome to the club.
Thank you.
We're excited to have you.
It's good to be here.
I bet you are so excited. I could tell by the smile on your face.
I am riveting with joy.
Pain User, welcome back as well.
Hey, hey.
We missed you a couple weeks. Know you
indeed.
Sick and holidays, and here we are. So happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, man.
How you doing?
I haven't seen you for a while.
I know.
It's been too long.
I know. But suddenly the land season's going to start, because literally
it is
right around the corner, and then you're all going to be sick of me and of each other.
I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's like we went through that hectic phase with so many tournaments, and then we had that nice little downtime over the break, and yeah, things are definitely going to pick up again here soon, so I'm excited as you are, man.
They will definitely be picking up literally in like 2-3 weeks. It's going to be totally crazy. So
madness.
And also, we have a new man on the show, ladies and gentlemen, In Control. Congratulations. You're doing it right this week's edition, Jeff.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. I'm really excited for you guys.
Yeah,
man. Likewise. I had to opportunity of seeing your guys' relationship at different points, and I don't know, I think you guys are awesome for each other, and
I think he's saying he wants to be best man at your wedding, or else maybe you're just not really
the from the bottom of my heart, man. Congratulations.
Thank you, dude. I really appreciate it. She's an amazing gal, and I'm really, really lucky to be associated with her.
She's always been super nice to me.
She's a great actress. Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Some people have been asking, like, if there's a day set and stuff like that. No, not yet. It's going to be less than a year from now. Closer to a year, though, so 9, 10 months, something like that. But all things as usual, man. Still going to be a pro gamer. Just one day at a time. Just grinding it out. Playing
awesome.
StarCraft. Trying to find my way. Trying to make sure I can eat meals.
Well, I think some of that in consideration will be good for a couple of the topics. We got some very good sort of insightful questions tonight.
Yeah, we do.
But Jeff, your cam has gone from crazy to crazier,
crazy.
And now I think it is back to normal. That was totally
still, awesome. It's still crazy for me. I don't know.
No, it's weird. I'm on these shows, and the webcam acts weird, but then I stream all day, and it acts totally normal. So
I don't know, man. Technology.
It's probably Skype.
Seriously.
It's probably Skype.
It probably is.
It's got to be Skype.
Panier User, you look like maybe I connected you via an old dial-up modem. And
really?
We're experiencing teleconferencing for the first time ever. But in all seriousness, In Control, congratulations.
Thank you. Totally awesome.
I don't know if you guys necessarily wanted it to spread like the wildfire that it spread, but it certainly is kind of unique in that people care, you know, about you guys.
It was always going to do that. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. It's okay.
It's kind of how it is, I guess. Guys, our first segment, very interesting topic, and I've heard so many different perspectives on it. But the one perspective I think that people haven't gotten the opportunity to hear that much is the player perspective. And maybe putting someone in a player's shoe to like better understand that. And of course, I'm talking about the Onog and the Stefano forfeit. And it's been a somewhat sensitive subject simply because Stefano has come back and kind of said, you know, I'm not really sure why everyone's so upset that I forfeited, because frankly, I would have played some terrible games. And the idea, if you haven't really caught up on this yet, is that Stefano, after winning his third place match, I believe versus Vile Illusion, then basically forfeited the final match. As a punishment, he was then dropped down to fourth place, and the winner of the new third place match then went on to play Kaz. Of course, the controversial issue of all this is the fact that Stefano kind of gave up this sort of right to the finals. Now, the Flip side of that, too, is that Onog actually had a bar craft going on in tandem. So it was like sort of a tournament to promote a specific bar craft. And then suddenly it's like a culmination of great things and then nothing.
Yep.
But really, is there a player's perspective that maybe people aren't thinking about? Who wants to maybe jump on this one first? Should we let? I think the Muslim, right? New guy
he's
on the block.
He's got that cheeky little grin on his
Bugga,
face.
Bugga, it's
all
me.
Right, all right.
Well, first of all, if you go into a tournament, you and especially somebody who's played as many tournaments as Stefano, you know how long these tournaments can go on for. So you take on that responsibility that you're going to play it through and through, even if you get to the end of it, you know. If you fall out early, that's fine, whatever. But you want to get to the end. That's the main goal, to win the whole thing. So he knew that he was going to have to, like, put up with it time-wise. So I think that's really bad. In terms of, like, what he was... Oh, he let everybody down that was watching him and supporting him. Like, even the people that wanted to see Stefano lose didn't get to see that. Like, the people that wanted to see him win, they also didn't get to see that. He literally didn't do himself any favors by what he did. By doing what he did. And, even though it's late, and even though he says he'd have delivered, like, games that weren't showing his true skill or potential or whatever, I still would have liked to have seen him play and do what he can, given what, like, situation he was in, you know? And I don't think it was fair of him at all.
Okay.
Well, one of the
fair's got nothing to do with it.
Wait, hold on. In control, you were first. Go ahead.
I'm going to go on a big-ass rant. So, just more importantly, I'll speak to exactly like the sentiment that Muslim's talking about. StarCraft II is a competition. It's a sport. It's one guy versus another, and there's different elements to that competition that determine whether or not one guy is better suited to win. And one of those is endurance. That's just a fact of the matter. When you play a tournament, it can go long. It can go harsh. It can be a best of seven, best of nine. We've seen that. Extended series, for God's sakes. There are conditions for which one player who is capable of playing better longer is better suited for a tournament. And for Stefano to add arbitrary, like, well, I'm tired because I signed up for this other tournament earlier that I just got done playing and winning, and now this one's at 2:30 a.m. going to start the grand finals, well, I'm going to hold you hostage. Either you reschedule or I quit. This is so bad for competition, just purely that, and I'll go on to something else in a second here. It's so bad. It's such an intolerably bad perspective and attitude that it has to be punished. So actually, the admins contacted me and said, do you think we were too harsh on him? And I said, absolutely not. I would have forfeit all his prize winnings and banned him from future invitational events where free money is up for grabs. Okay, this is a 32-man invitational for $3,000. And Stefano's one of the best players outside of Korea, so naturally he cut right to the finals. It's actually costing him money, but it should have cost him more. Now, that's just the competition. Like, we have to play through the endurance factor. But what's actually worse is this is a volunteer-ran, publicly funded tournament by what they make from the bar crafts. So for them to not get ROI on people wanting to see one of the more exciting Zerg players out there, Stefano, for the drama to steal the attention away from the tournament and to take away from the positivity that should have been a publicly funded and ran tournament, is so bad, it's so detrimental to the scene, that it has to be smote with the fucking fiery hammer of Thor. It's just not acceptable. If a player goes into a tournament and wants to say, I may or may not play based upon how I feel, fuck you guys, then we can't have that in the community. That just simply cannot be. It's an unwritten contract that when a player says, yes, I will play in your tournament, that they actually fucking play.
Hey.
If they don't play in the tournament, then they're a lying, backstabbing bitch.
Okay.
And I like them, but that's how he acts.
Okay. Hey, Control, I got a good question to you to follow up, right? Because traditionally, I'm trying to think of a whole lot of situations in which a player actually got to the finals and then bowed out of a competition. You know, I have seen the unfortunate incidents of maybe some sort of online finals where the final comes up and because of lag or internet issues, you know, the game cannot happen and so it has to be rescheduled. But I cannot think of a player who has actually quit in a finals situation. You've been around for a long time in StarCraft. Can you think of any time where that's happened?
No. I mean,
I wonder
the thing
if
is,
you... Go ahead.
The 14 years of Brood War or whatever it was, we had like three tournaments a year, so it just simply never happened. Now in StarCraft II, there's some players that are so damn good, like Stefano, where this isn't that big of a deal to him. This is, you know, there wasn't 20,000 people watching. There wasn't $20,000 up for grabs. So he could, I mean, from his perspective, he probably felt like, listen, I'm really tired because I just got done kicking the shit out of another tournament. I don't want to show bad games. What's the big deal? And that's okay because he's a young guy who's enjoying a lot of success. But what's not okay is for the community to be divided on this and to be like, that's fine, Stefano, we'll let you slide. What they need to say is, that was really bad, here's why, you're punished, and then he learns, okay, in the future, when I go into a tournament, I'm going to gauge my time better so I can actually live up to my end of the deal. Because otherwise, tournaments like this go away, it's too much risk, you know what I mean? Like, it's sure. Just too bad for the community.
Okay, Penny, so let's hear your thoughts, and then maybe we'll get a quick thought on sort of like...
I don't always sign up for tournaments, but when I do, I leave in the semifinals. I don't really know like what the whole deal with him being retired at the end of the tournament is. I mean, I certainly think he could have finished out those last few games. But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Jeff. Like the weird thing about it is just the air of DGAF, if you will, just the straight do not give a attitude coming into it. You know, it's like, oh, tired, I'm just going to take off. It's one thing if you contact the guys organizing the tournament, you talk to them beforehand, you know,
sure,
and you're
sure.
Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it. This isn't working out for me. I got into a kind of similar, you know, debacle with NASL where I was like having scheduling problems throughout the season and I was unable to attend matches and stuff, and I was talking to them about it. It's not like we weren't like discussing the issue. But I mean, for Stefano, and I wonder maybe if maybe trying to one-up Greg a little bit in leaving in the semifinals. Maybe we'll have a player try and leave in the finals of a tournament. But I think it really comes down to the fact that the tournament was just insignificant to him. And like Jeff said, the tournament might not have been insignificant to a lot of other people,
sure.
The organizers, the fans, anybody who was involved in it. So, you know, he definitely took a little bit of a crap on those people, that's for sure. But, yeah, all in all, I think... You know, he's at fault, and he
okay.
should definitely be punished for it.
Well, that's kind of the next question is, like, you know, should be punished, but, I mean...
Absolutely. But do I think the punishment was necessarily fair? Should they have gone farther? Should they have gone less extreme? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Like, well, I guess more or less is that, like, is sort of the backlash that he's received just on a fan level and a community level and sort of even a player level, is that, like, enough of a punishment, right? Is it maybe enough that... Stefano's
I don't think he's been taught a lesson.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, you know, I know Stefano as well. I think he's a really cool guy, but to be honest, I just don't think Stefano is going to care or does care. I mean, he obviously doesn't care, or he wouldn't have done it in the first place. So, you know...
It's the heralding of a new times. Like, I don't think any one of us thinks Stefano did it maliciously. It's just kind of...
No.
It's a culmination of who he is and the conditions he was playing under, but... What this means for tournaments pushing forward is that they have to get in writing from the players, like,
yeah.
Yes, I will play all my matches. Because, if you're running a tournament like this, it's really vulnerable. It's a vulnerable place to be. Like, if MLG or IPL runs a tournament and someone tries to pull this shit on them, they carry a big stick. If they're like, you won't play in any more events, that player cares. That's a lot of money, potentially, especially... For a guy like Stefano, who's a legitimate threat in any tournament he enters, right? So if $25,000 is up for grabs, he gives a damn. He said it himself, he only plays for money. But if a small tournament like this, that doesn't necessarily mean that much to Stefano, but it means the world to the dozen people putting it on, to the several hundred people who funded it, and to the countless thousands of people who, that's their entertainment. That's how they get involved in StarCraft 2.
Sure.
For those people, there should be security that the player is going to give his best effort to compete. And you know what? If Stefano really was so exhausted that it was just going to be shit games, then he goes to them and says, hey, it's really late. I'm terribly sorry. Is there any way at all that we could reschedule, postpone? The answer is probably 9 times out of 10 no.
Right.
And then he has to deal with that. But for him to say, I'm not going to play, that's the bottom line. But you can either reschedule or I quit. That's the kind of shit that has to get weeded out really quick. Otherwise, tournaments aren't going to feel safe.
You know, this another thing. This whole thing it's online, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know, sometimes with online tournaments, I think that the risk is much higher with the things that we're discussing, because I know personally when I was playing in a lot of online tournaments, sometimes you're on a tournament bender, you know, you've been practicing for 12 hours and it's like, oh, you know, this European tournament starting in an hour. Oh, look, I could sign up for this tournament. You know, it might have been an impulse sign up for Stefano, or, you know, maybe he signed up for it and wasn't really thinking about it, and then it kind of just popped up like in the middle of one of his sleep cycles. And, you know, towards the end of the tournament, he could have been, you know, completely exhausted, like passing out at the terminal. I know I've been in that situation before, so he might have just thrown in the towel. Maybe he really couldn't play due to his situation, you know? How could we know? There's no... And if it was a LAN event...
That might be true.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, because, you know, he's at home, he's in his own environment, he could be all over the place. And if it was a LAN event, I highly doubt something like this would actually happen at a LAN event, ever. I mean, and he would just be disqualified or thrown out immediately at a LAN event. I'm sure MLG wouldn't, IPL wouldn't either have any kind of remorse for a situation like that.
Well, certainly interesting as kind of a first in my book, and seeing that. And, I mean, yeah, there have been other cases, other players leaving early, perhaps not finishing a series. But it seriously was just kind of a stale conclusion, if you will, to, you know. And luckily, yeah, it got resolved, which is good.
Yeah.
But hopefully they, you know, I don't think they got a lot of press from that, you know, actually happening. And they still had a finals, which was good. So I think overall it ended up pretty good for One Nation of Gamers. So, you know, good luck to them as they continue on. And let's, unless anyone has any final comments.
I think I mean, it.
Yeah, like, what, well, hold on. I want to ask Jeff something real quick.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Hold on.
What do you... What?
Shut up.
It's... what do you think would have been... I know you mentioned, like, it could have been handled more severely or more swiftly, like Thor's Flaming Hammer. What do you think would be, like, a good way maybe to handle something like this and give him a message that's clear enough and severe enough that would maybe prevent something like this from happening in the future?
I would have just left it at explaining to him pretty clearly, okay, forfeit, can't stop you from doing it. You can't force a player to play, so that means you're getting no prize money. And when he's like, what the hell, why would you ever do that? You would explain very clearly, this is the grand finals, this is how we make back the money we were actually spending right now, this is how we fund future events, this is what your fans and other people are expecting, and you need to play it out. And if he says, I simply can't, I'd play really bad, you know, then you start explaining really oddly to him competition, where it's like, well, if every time a player felt like they were too tired to play their absolute best, they quit, we wouldn't have a competitive scene. So you need to understand you're acting very selfish right now and immature. And I'm sorry that you planned your weekend so bad around winning two tournaments. You know, like, oh, woe is me. The poor guy got tired from beating the shit out of the best outside of Korea. Like, wow, wow, wow. I'd love to have his problems.
Yeah, I think that's just kind of it. Because that would be a nice problem to have, I think.
So is it just me? Okay, so, like, I don't know too much about Stefano's, like, actual playing habits, but it seems like there's kind of this, like, aura of, like I said, just DGAF. Like, he doesn't care at all.
I mean, he says streams, he doesn't he plays, practice. He practices. So, I mean, there's something in him that cares enough to want to win.
He has stated multiple times, like, I only play for the money, and... Like, that he only practices 3 or 4 hours a day, but he's still able to maintain, you know, a super competitive spot in upper echelon. There's no way, like...
I don't know that any of this was necessarily, like, intended to be a dissection of Stefano in general, but, I mean, deep down, there is got to be something inside him that he does that makes him care about practicing at this game. Whether that is, like, the, holy crap, I'm really good at this, so I might as well try to just, like, get as much money as I can. You know, maybe he's not interested in being a personality outside of it. Maybe he's not interested in seeing any sort of continuation in a career in esports. And from that perspective, I could see how that would change everything. And well, when you said ushering in a new era, that kind of triggered something else in my head, in that a new era of player, like a player who's seriously like, I could just use my skills here and like win a lot of money, boom, and I'm done. And so they care about it on a different level. Like, you have a really, really vast investment in it, Jeff.
The thing is I don't really know if that player, like, exists. You have to absolutely love this game to some degree to play at that competitive level. I don't think there's anyone at that level who's just, like, cutthroat for the money, like, doesn't care about anything else, doesn't care about the community. Like, I just don't think they even exist.
People try to say that Stefano, but if that were the case, then he wouldn't cite his reasoning as,
exactly,
I don't want to show bad games to my fans. He would just suck it up, shut up, play terrible games, and pocket $600.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, like, he cares enough that he doesn't want to look bad in front of people, or as if he's, like, not showing good games, you know. He cares enough that he wants people to think he is the best still, like, so he definitely cares, and, like, this facade that he has where he says he only plays, like, few hours a day, like, he's in a freaking Millennium training house right now, so he cares a lot, and I mean, he had his reasons, but I think it's a really silly reason personally.
He's a heel. Anyway, we'll move on topics, but I guess the justice we can do is that check out Stefano. He streams every once in a while, and he doesn't lose very often. It's pretty
interesting. He's a good guy. He's one of the best. He's just amazing. Immature, and he needs the community. It takes a village to raise a child in this case. You know what I mean? A Rastafarian French arrogant child.
Jeff, awesome. Killing it as usual.
Awesome. Yes, as usual. All right. We got, that didn't update properly. That says Home Story Cup 4 and I Am Kiev. That was supposed to be sort of event updates, but it didn't turn out that way. So I'll just go ahead and we'll just do that. And we're gonna do, sorry about that. NASL Goes Live was dropped yesterday.
Ooh.
On Kings of Tin, a matter of fact. This Gray Torp let us in on that little tidbit of information. And I think that's a really, really great thing to hear. I know that it's a big undertaking to go through, but one of the loudest complaints that I have heard over the course of NASL's history is, well, I'm not really a fan of the whole pre-recorded thing. So now all these people finally get to step up to the plate and see if that was actually the reason that was keeping them from, you know, not enjoying it in the same way. I'm excited for these guys. I really look forward to see what they can do. But I think it's a cool step forward for them.
I think it's good for the fans above all else, and that's obviously the big motivator here. But I'll speak to the players as well. It's good for the players. In the NASL Season 2, they did this like really delayed broadcast, which meant that every week you're playing at least two matches, but sometimes three. And that really dilutes the glory of a league like this, where I get a whole week to prepare for somebody. If I'm just playing matches on a regular basis and I have a bad day, boom, I'm out of the tournament. And that's being broadcast to 20,000 people or something like that. So it was just kind of a bad combination of being a slave to the schedule and then also handicapping the players in their matches. So you didn't see the highest quality play. With going live one match a week, hopefully, as it should be, I think this is better for the players, it's better for the casters, it's better for everybody. It's going to make the league better.
Yeah. The Muslim, or, I mean, you've been a player in it. What do you think about this?
I think it's amazing that they're going live. The biggest problem for me was, I had to play all these games, and then to wait for the finals to happen, I had to wait, like, 2 or 3 months for it to happen. And, like, I had a massive problem where I got, like, deported and stayed in England for, like, a month or almost 2 months and didn't have a PC. And then when the finals came, I didn't get to practice for it. So I wasn't in the same shape. And people who went to the finals who qualified from NASL, you could have seen, like, way inferior games than if they were, like, just tip-top shape coming off top of their group, you know, and then bang, straight into the finals or whatever. So I like that. Also, I like the pressure of it on the players, you know. And I like it for the fans. If I'm watching the game, I want to see it live, and I want to see, like, what happens. As a player, it builds me up better for, like, the future in terms of, like, pressure situations. But, yeah, the main thing, I just really hated the waiting for the finals. Like, I know I've played all these games. I wait for them to get released. I can't talk about it. Nothing can be shown. And kind of less motivated for the finals to actually happen, given I've just waited so long for it. But
it displaces I'm really happy you a bit. It really
exactly,
does.
Exactly.
Yeah. Paid News, I don't know if you have any thought on this, but you've done both live and recorded content.
Yeah, personally, live content to me is way more entertaining as a spectator and as a caster.
Oh,
I mean, just the air of excitement is there. You can interact with the fans. It's awesome. And the games are just so much more intense. It's a lot more difficult, I think, to do live events. They're going to run into a lot of obstacles, but I think it's a huge move for them as an organization, and if they can execute it properly and do it well, I think it'll be great for them. One thing that I was kind of worried about that ties into what we were discussing on the last question about players, you know, no-showing or not being able to go, because not all the players involved are necessarily in a position where they can just travel. Is it all going to be paid? Is it all going to be paid? Are they going to be, because, you know, they ran into the problem with the Koreans where they pulled out because of, like, some accommodation issues or something like that. Are they going to be flying everyone out? Is it, how's it going to work?
Yeah, exactly? I don't know that we've gotten all of the details yet. So, you know, as always, in fact, I don't know that any league has put all their details out regarding 2012 in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're kind of in a sit and wait and see.
I'm really, you know, interested to see how it plays out for them, but I certainly wish them the best. I do like everyone over there at NASL, so I hope they do it well, and I think it would be cool to check out. It would make it more interesting for me, that's for sure. As an NASL spectator from time to time.
Absolutely.
And I kind of fall into that too, you know, where from time to time I'll turn into NASL and I'll wonder sort of where they are in the season and, you know, what the significance of the match is, and to kind of tighten that up and have it in a live environment and have the succession of games be quicker, I think would really help them out.
Tighten it up. I think that's pretty much straight on. So, all right, well, moving on in other sort of league news. A lot of people have been talking about it more, and I feel like even though the reception at the beginning might have been, I'm not going to say weak, but maybe just not as strong as some of the other events, I have really been enjoying both the IPL Team Arena Challenge and the North American Star Team League. I kind of just wanted to ask you, I mean, we've talked about the team formats and all that stuff many times here on Inside the Game, but I just feel like more people, I think because more players are joining more teams and the team brands are becoming followable. Like, people want to root for this team, that team, and I'm really just kind of impressed with how much these have grown as of late. You know, I just wanted to kind of chat about it a little bit because there was a couple people who emailed that said, hey, I'd love to hear what these guys think about it. Do they enjoy it? Is it, you know, just kind of they're in it? Is, you know, how much camaraderie is there behind it? And, you know, especially the Muslim in Control, you guys are in both of these. Talk to us a little bit about that. Who wants to?
Team leagues are the backbone of competitive StarCraft II. Like, individual leagues like an MLG, IPL, that kind of stuff, that's really fun and really good and great. Obviously, it's the lifeblood, I would say, of the competitive scene. That's where people really get to know the players and really follow it. But there's also that sense of, you know, team rivalry, but also seeing, like, the excitement of a certain player being called in as a sniper, or the, you know, perilous matchups and down-to-the-wire scores, that kind of stuff. That's what a team league brings. And to have it escalated as the IPL has done and also the NASL has done with a sizable prize pool and inviting, you know, and having qualifying process, too, for all the best teams in the world, pretty damn sick. It's just it's where the competitive scene needs to be. And you know, Masters Cup from EG is going to be coming up as well as probably a few other leagues. And there's even a Korean clan league as well, outside of the GSL, of course. And all those things, like, that's, I love the different angles we're hitting the competitive feel for this game, and this is a huge part of that.
The Muslim, what do you think?
I love team leagues. I always have done. Like, in Warcraft 3, the game that I came from, there was only pretty much one league that meant anything, and it wasn't, like, although WCG and stuff, like, solo leagues meant a lot, it was WC3L, you know, like, even though the prize money was smaller than these solo leagues, like, that was what meant everything to everybody. You're not only playing for yourself, but you're playing for your team and all the people that support your team, and that's probably more than that just support you. There's a lot on your back, and if you are to like carry your team through like a really narrow victory and stuff, like that's one of the biggest kind of like honors you can possibly give to your team, you know? So I personally really always look forward to team matches and team leagues and stuff. Like, it's really good to be in one of these teams. I'm cheering on my teammates, helping them practice for it, and they're helping me. So, like, massive camaraderie, and it builds these teams as well, like, in terms of players, and, like, we're all much closer because of it. But also just seeing, like, so many matches partake, and these guys aren't only playing for themselves, but, again, their teams, like, yeah, there's a lot of like, nifty stuff that can go down, and I think it just means so much more to everybody.
Payne, you've obviously, been involved with team leagues, not only playing, but also casting before.
Yep.
You pretty much share the same sentiments with these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something we wanted to do with the Team Arena Challenge. I mean, it was actually sort of Kevin's, Cat's Pajamas, little brainchild. We talked about it early on and thought it would be a huge success because, well, I mean, it's not like we were the first ones to come up with the idea, but we wanted to do it here. And it came to fruition, and it's been pretty successful, and we really enjoy it because, personally, I love thinking about what goes into teammates' heads as far as the picking process is concerned, like which players to throw out when. All the different racial matchups really come into play. There's a lot of strategy involved. And then also sort of like what Ben was saying, there's really a lot of opportunity for individual players to really shine and make a big name for themselves if they take out multiple players in succession. And then also they can really sort of carry their team on their shoulders, if you will. Each match has a lot more to it, I feel, than just an individual league.
Sure.
Because kind of the fate of your team is on the line. And then also it really builds a lot of intensity towards the end. If a set between two games or between two teams happens to go to, you know, the eighth game, it gets really, really intense. And as a caster, I love that because it just creates this awesome format for entertaining games. So
that,
I love
to
it.
To me, is one of the things that sticks out the most. Like, I feel like it builds that storyline. There's some good drama. You think about the GSTL2 and how that sort of brought some new talent and faces in, like you all three had kind of mentioned. So it's really been fantastic. And if you guys haven't checked it out, I really urge you guys, especially if you are some, you know, we have those team fanboys out there, man. They exist. And the Muslim brought up Warcraft 3, and I honestly believe that some of that team fandom has disappeared a little bit from the old, you know, from the old days. During the Quake 3, the Nations Cups, and even the teams that represented, like you would sometimes root for a nation just because it had a guy from your favorite team on it. You know, it like that's how sort of in depth that got. And in some cases, I feel like that's been missing a little bit. So I definitely urge everyone to check both of them out. Of course, directory listings on both. By the way, man, I like IPL's directory listing. I was checking it out the other day. So good stuff. Last but not least, there was a little post to post about this whole thing that happened with the GOM TV and a Barcraft in Korea getting shut down. Did you guys hear about this?
No.
I heard whisperings, so you'll have to inform me.
All right, so basically, the story is that they were asked to shut down a Barcraft because they were broadcasting. And GOM TV actually responded. And we have the response in actually a screen cap as well. And let's see, one second. It just says, "Dear Mr. Hong, fans outside of Korea do not have the means to visit the GSL studio. We therefore support and encourage organizers to hold Barcrafts outside of Korea to let international viewers experience the GSL in a friendly atmosphere with like-minded fans. Korea is relatively small, therefore we would like to encourage all fans who reside in Korea to come and visit the studios to enjoy a full live experience. Which I can certainly understand. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is why we temporarily put Barcraft activities in Korea on hold for the time being. An announcement regarding our plans will be made as soon as the details have been confirmed. So they do say they're working on a project that will cater to fans who are not able to attend the studio. But they that. Sounds like they want to control it a little bit. That's kind of the shtick here.
Do they have the power to do that?
I mean, sure, I guess they've got some sort of similar...
In what way,
law,
though?
I don't know. There's probably some sort of Korean legal, you know?
Yeah. So they're just going to... I mean, I don't know. If the Korean Barcraft movement, like, really wants to push it, they could just throw Barcrafts everywhere, V for Vendetta style. Like, what are they going to do?
I don't know that that's quite... In, like, that doesn't really match the culture too much.
Yeah, exactly. So if they want to shut it down, then they probably will.
It's just really bad. I mean, like, we dealt with this a little bit on the business side of NESL when I was working with them. You don't necessarily want on a very, like, line-by-line level... And I'm restarting my camera for the people in the stream, so I apologize if it's, like, black right now. We're going to try to fix it in a second, but let me finish my point. You don't want 450 people watching one account for free on the line-by-line level. That, from the business perspective, they'd like it if all 450 people had their own paid-for subscription that they were watching from, or in this case, if they're in Korea, if they were going down to the studio and filling those seats, paying, you know, with their eyes, or at least making it appear more exciting for people outside that. But the reason this is really bad is to shut something down like that, it sends too strong of a negative message to a bunch of people that are trying to support what you're doing and are excited about it and are also, like any just in general marketing wise person would look at that and say, well, these are people who, yeah, they're not necessarily directly paying you right now, but who's to say they don't fall in love with it, go home, and instead of attending a Barcraft every single damn time you have an event, they say, it makes more sense for me to watch the VODs and to be a part of it on stream, so I'm going to go do that. Or, wow, I had such a good time there, I want to go see that player live. I'm going to head to the studio for the next event. But if you send any kind of wrench into the gears of that machine, there's the potential for those people to be like, wow, you're kind of a bastard. Like, we were having a great time and you shut us down? Well, screw that, I'm not going to be a part of it anymore. So it's this really fine line. And, of course, I don't know everything that's involved in this, but from an outsider's perspective, I would just say this. I would never, ever try to combat a grassroots movement like this that, yes, doesn't pay you directly, but it does pay your brand, which is a good thing in the long run. That's what GOM needs. People are so excited that they're going to Korean bars, and they're filling it with people just wanting to watch StarCraft II.
For sure. Another thing I would kind of add is, like, they're two very, very, very different viewer experiences. One, you're trying to go to a bar, enjoy some drinks with some friends, hopefully some close friends. At least when I go to Barcrafts, or when I have been, it's usually just to enjoy it in that atmosphere. And I doubt that the GOM TV studios are anything similar to that. So it's like two totally different viewer experiences, maybe two totally different fan subsets, right?
Right.
Anybody who's going to be going to the GOM TV studio is going to be like a diehard, you know, GSL fan, and maybe the more casual fans, who are, like Jeff said, I 100% agree, who are the fans that we really need to nurture as a community, the people who aren't necessarily the super hardcore fans. Not to say that one is any more important than the other, but they're the fans that we should really be focused on bringing into the scene. So, and the whole Barcraft movement is great for that. People are at in social venues. They're talking to people about the game. People are walking up asking, hey, what the hell is on those monitors. I've never seen anything like that before. People are explaining it. So at least that's the vibe I've always gotten from every Barcraft I've been to. So I think that they're just a great thing in general, and I don't know why you would want to shut something like that down. Jeff said it perfectly well. It's a grassroots, positive movement for the sport as a whole. So I don't know why they would want to do that.
Yeah,
I think fostering it would be the better
from
idea.
Controlling it from a business standpoint, I can kind of understand.
Can they, though? Like,
I mean,
I don't...
Well, yeah, because like they could tell them that you can't show our content inside, inside your bar, I guess. So, yeah.
This can have, like, two very adverse effects, though. Like, while some people in that bar could have been like, oh, okay, we'll come down to the studio from now on, like, I'd be more, like, I'm now really mad. Like, I'm not even going to watch this anymore kind of thing. Like, I'm not going to buy the season ticket or whatever, you know? Like, it can go down two, like, very different ways. And if people in this bar just came to, like, drink or whatever, and then they experienced StarCraft 2 also, like, you're showing it to more people and stuff, and, like, in the long run, that's ultimately better. As soon as somebody starts controlling it to this degree, like, in a casual atmosphere, like, sure, if you have, like, hundreds of people on one account, which might happen, that's kind of bad. But, like, this isn't going to happen, like, every time you run a GSL show, you know? Like, this is just going to be showing more people in the long run, like StarCraft 2. And I think that's ultimately what it's all about.
Right. Well, I'll be curious to see what this special project is that they are... that they're working on, and whether or not that's going to have an impact on, you know, sort of the BarCraft movement across the world. So, all right, let's do this. So we have another topic, and then we have email that we can get to. So let's get through this other topic. Then we'll take a quick break. We come back. We got a couple emails. We'll open up the phone lines.
Sounds good.
And go with that. So our last topic here is actually comes from an email. And, I'm sorry, no, I take that back. It didn't come from an email. It came from a disgruntled Reddit post, which makes this really good, right? By the way, pain user, if you actually drop from the call and then instantly reconnect, your camera will work again. So it's there. Oh, look, he's just
he's
like,
on the
boom.
Ball.
Yeah, and he went for it.
FPS replay.
Yeah, now go ahead and turn your camera back on. And it will be, you'll no longer be noodled.
I kind of like the noodle face, man.
I bet you do. Foreigner Hope, this guy posts on Reddit. I'm gonna read it sort of in his... Over the past few months, I have been a die-hard Foreigner fan, justifying their every loss, saying, quote, Koreans aren't that good, etc. After seeing my two favorite Foreigners promptly walk out of the GSL, I'm done with this viewpoint. Koreans are just the superior players. Not because of their race, but because they are dedicated. They don't play LOL for hours on end. They practice and they practice to make up for the practice they didn't do hard enough. So I have changed my mind about Indra and Huck and the like. It truly is saddening watching the Foreigners living up to their name as the second place finishers in StarCraft 2.
Oh, wow.
This dramatic post hit Reddit earlier today.
I think we could have read that better, by the way.
You do? You think I should have been, like, much more whiny
more
about
dramatic.
It?
Or...
Yeah, you got to take his voice on, man. I used to be a fan. Right?
Jeff's go-to complain voice.
It is.
You know, geez.
I mean, this wasn't front page. This wasn't anything, but I'll be honest. I've seen this thrown out a few times over the past couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The results have been, you know, after a 3 months of like, oh my gosh, the Foreigners are turning it around. It's amazing. And we've had some amazing displays of talent all around. But, you know, people are coming back to this conclusion. And last night was maybe, you know, the straw.
It was just MLG Providence. Probably the biggest, the biggest land most recent, which is the most uneloquent way of saying... The lands from then to now haven't been as big as that one. We had Naniwa taking out Nesty and MVP in the pre-tournament finals.
Right.
We had him make it to the finals against Leenok, a top eight without Nesty. Like, here's the bottom line. If this is news to people, then you're just stupid. I don't have anything funnier to say. You're just dumb. Koreans are better. They're better at StarCraft 2. Wrap your head around that for a second. Now, be that as it may, there are going to be tournaments where Foreigners do better. There's going to be non-Koreans who are specifically capable of beating multiple Koreans and taking high places. There's going to be lucky draws. There's going to be conditions where these things happen. But on average, the top Koreans are better than the top non-Koreans. So I'm so tired of the, like, every single time a tournament happens where a Korean gets knocked out or a non-Korean gets knocked out, people are like... Everybody, non-Koreans are now the best, or hey, everybody, Koreans are way better now. Like, this is going to go on forever until we as a community start to realize, like, holy shit, Korea is the best place to train. Koreans are the best players. And it's really cool when a guy like Naniwa starts bashing skulls and doing really well. Greg gets bounced out of this tournament. He trains for a couple of months, and he makes it to the round of eight the next one, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not appropriate or intelligent to look at Huck and Idra's Code A performance and then be like, well, that settles it. Non-Koreans are trash, and Koreans will always beat them forever. Ask me why. Because on January 31st, they lost two best of three separately in the same tournament to Koreans. It's like, it's so gross. Is there anybody out there that says non-Koreans are just as good as Koreans?
I don't know.
Is there anyone saying that?
Absolutely not.
I always found the story of sort of the, you know, the fact that this global phenomenon in which we are able to at least compete on a level doesn't necessarily mean victory. But you know what? I like rooting for that victory. I have this conversation with Slasher all the time, man. Is that like, that's one of my favorite things. That's a big draw to me. I think it makes those victories that much sweeter.
And then, like, the other part I don't know. This doesn't necessarily bother me. It just makes me laugh more often than not. People, like, have this romantic vision of Koreans. Like, they have, like, USBs coming from their veins, and they plug into the computer, and then, like, a mouse slides out from their palm, and a keyboard inject, like, forms in front of them from a mental image that they just, like, projected. And they start playing the game for 15 hours every day while their eyes twitch, and they're, like, plugged into the internet. It's not how it is. Koreans spend 3 or 4 hours a day listening to K-pop. You think I'm making that up, but it's actually true. It's hilarious.
It is true.
They love Korean music. They love it. They watch movies. They go out for food once, twice a day because that's kind of their socialization. They don't really go to movies. They go out for food. And then they watch other movies at home. They play other games. Do they train? You bet your ass. They train 10, 12 hours, some of them. Most of them, it's more like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
They play a lot of games on the Korean ladder, which is the best, and then they play customs with other top Koreans who are the best players in the planet. So they have the best training, and they're talking to the best players, and they're playing in a place where most of them are in training houses. The up-and-coming talent are the guys playing on the best ladder with the best latency as well. So it's really weird every time these like random forum jobbers are like, well, you know, Koreans, I heard they actually only eat applesauce because it's the fastest food to digest. It's like, no, they're human beings too.
They could do it.
Yeah.
You guys have any other comments?
I mean, not really. It's a pretty silly subject. Jeff kind of went in depth on it. It's like, just think how much more money Koreans as a whole have invested in StarCraft. Like, they have team houses. They have... All the team houses have big-name sponsors that allow those houses to run and fund them. I mean, we're not even close to that. There's Mr. Doa right there photobombing me. We don't have that here in the U.S., you know? It's just on a completely different level in Korea. It's not even comparable. It's a fully evolved actual sport there, and they've been doing it for years, and they have a system down that produces badass players. And they find young talent, and they nurture it, and they get really good.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm done. We don't have that here. it's not at that level yet, and I can't wait till it is, but
What I was going to say is the cool things to speculate on are, like, Koreans are more hungry. Fewer Koreans get paid, and the Koreans that do get paid a lot less than their non-Korean counterparts. Koreans also have on hand the biggest league with the biggest prize pool on a regular basis in the world. The GSL. So there's more for them to play for, and there's, I mean, just in every facet of that term. They're fighting for a salary, they're fighting for recognition, and then they're fighting for entry into the best tournament on the planet that grants you both. So that's kind of cool. That's something that you could speak to as a much better motivator for those guys than it is for a lot of non-Koreans that collect a pretty damn good salary and aren't the top, you know, the top Korean, right? It's easier for myself or other non-Koreans to make a living wage while not being a three-time GSL champion. But this idea that Koreans just flat-out put in more time than every other non-Korean is ridiculous. Nanua plays 30, 40 games a day. Tyler, who isn't training right now, but when he did train, he would actually do the most boring training regimen you've ever heard in your life. But he did it because that's what worked for him, you know? Like, there are non-Koreans who train on a regular basis, and they're doing good things.
All right. Well, there you go, Rattler, with such conviction he went through. All right, well, let's take a break, and then when we come back, we have some mail that came in. We actually have our first mailbag item is actually for the Muslim, based off of a match that was played just yesterday. And then we got an email about map rotation. And then we'll open up the phone lines for you guys to chit-chat about anything that you want to. So thanks for joining us here for Inside the Game. Don't go away. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we've got more coming at you. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. What is up? We're back here for the second half Inside the Game. Thanks for joining us. I'm DJ Wheats, joined by Pain User, the Muslim, and In Control, who is wearing his invisible cloak that he got when he was at Disneyland and he visited the... is there a Harry Potter section of Disneyland? No? Wait, I can't hear you. Why can't I hear you? Is there... the Muslim, you went, right?
No, I didn't go. I stayed and practiced.
So you don't know that?
Not a clue.
Okay. Do you know, Pain User? I mean, you're drinking sugar-free Red Bull, after all. Do you know if there's a Harry Potter land in Disneyland? Oh, snap.
Dude.
Yeah, I saw that cost $1. $1 in the IGN offices.
It does cost $1.
Yeah,
but
I went and visited. It was great.
That's the free beer cost.
Oh, nice. Well,
we had a chili cook-off today in the office. It was glorious.
Awesome. Awesome.
Cat's pajamas.
So great over there right now.
Cat's pajamas made a chili with no beans. I think there was a half pound of brisket beef and a third of a pound of bacon. It was delicious.
But what about the beans, man?
There were no beans? I don't know. It's just like traditional Texan style.
What's traditional about that? With lack of beans.
I don't know. There were no beans, though, dude. That's all I'm saying. No
is
beans.
Is that allowed to be called chili, guys? Can I any chime in?
I don't know. I personally like the beans and chili. It makes it a lot better. Yeah. Don't tell. Yeah. No. See, because Cat's Pajamas is the only one that submitted Chili from the IPL team, so we all had to rally behind him for the voting, but don't tell him I secretly voted for number one, which was not Cat's Pajamas Chili.
Your secret's safe with the internet.
Yeah, he doesn't know. Totally secret. I'm sure.
Everyone here.
What did the winner get?
I don't know.
Because you know what? We did a chili cook-off in my bank job, the job of the past. And
we don't speak about that anymore.
The job that will not be named. But in my opinion, my wife makes a pretty fucking awesome pot of chili. She may be Asian, but damn it, she makes a pretty
good pot of chili. She fights through it. She
does. It's like, I want to put sesame oil. It's like, no. But she doesn't really talk like that at all.
Jokes you can make when you're married to an Asian woman are so awesome.
It is. I'm sure I
can't make that joke.
So anyway, in my opinion, like, her chili just should have won. And it was for like a $50 gift certificate. I was really upset. Wow. I was going to totally hand it over to her and be like, buy $50 worth of chili stuff and make a whole nother batch. But no, seriously, what'd they win, Pain User?
I have no idea. I think bragging rights.
What? There's like not...
No, there wasn't like a public prize. It was just like everybody brings food and like...
If I would have been in that chili competition, man, I would have made it to the final two, and then I would have just been like, you know what? I'm pulling out of this one.
Wait. My chili's not perfect enough. It's not up to my standards.
I'm tired. Pulling. I'm gonna pull my chili out of the competition, guys.
Wait, it wasn't even like that, man.
Eat all of it.
It's like a friendly, you know, everybody's eating food and chatting and having a beer. It's like it was a good thing.
That's horrible. I love you. Anyway, all right, we got a mailbag here as we fire that up. And the first one is for DeMuslim. Says,
cool.
He's like, this mail is for DeMuslim, but then he speaks to you in like third person. So I was watching DeMuslim in the War of the Roses yesterday and noticed a couple times in mid to late game situations that Bling would have many stationary observers around the map and would also go DTs. My question is, are Ravens not a good unit to mix in at that point to help eliminate those units? I realize Ravens require a tech lab while the Vikings and Medivacs don't, but would you get that financial investment back by being able to use the orbital energy for mules instead of scans, or would the fact that Bling also had numerous high Templars in his army render the Ravens useless? So, you know, this is always one of my favorite questions we get for Inside the Game, because obviously this guy really enjoyed watching the show match and was thinking about, I wonder what DeMuslim was thinking, like, why didn't he necessarily do this? And so it's rare when people get the opportunity to hear, you know, that answer directly from your brain. So drop it on us. What do you think?
Ravens are far too slow. DTs can be spawned in any point on the map, like if you have a Warp Prism or a Pylon. And in order for the Raven to get there with some units as well, it's just too slow. Also, by the time like DTs are actually out, for this Raven to be effective, you have to have the Raven already out, which is just not going to be, like, it's impossible. Or it's not impossible to predict DTs, but scans are just quick, efficient, and easy. And if you have several more orbitals, which you're bound to do if the game gets that late, throwing down a scan and just running some stimmed units over to sort or deal with the problem, that's so much more efficient than a Raven running slowly over, saving yourself 270 minerals on a scan. But unlike the DT's already done the damage with like the Raven trying to work its way there. Like, sure, you can get several Ravens, but when the fight actually comes, they're going to be pretty useless. So that's my philosophy behind it.
All right. And so, I mean, it kind of negates the question then of, like, the orbital for the mules instead of scans. But do you ever find that to be a problem?
No.
I mean, are you ever like, oh, God, I have to scan another time, and that's one mule I'm not going to get back home?
Yeah, that situation of the game, like, for sure, the first 10 minutes, you want to use every possible, like, 50 energy on a mule, you know? Like, you're rushing to get as far ahead as in economy as you possibly can. Late game, when you can actually bank and like you're getting so many minerals and your gas is piling up, you actually have so many minerals that you can throw down extra like orbitals, you know, and like just lots of barracks and stuff. So the problem isn't with conserving energy for mules; it's just being in places all at the same time.
All right. Well, hopefully that answered guy's question. I didn't have his name down there. Let's take the one other email that was about map rotations, and I actually had a question that appends to this. But how do the hosts feel about a frequency of maps rotating in and out of tournament map pools? And we've talked plenty about maps. I know some people are going to be like, oh, my God, not maps again. Basically, he goes on to say, for spectators watching the same thing over and over gets old, map rotation keeps the game fresh, but taxes players' practice time for forcing them to abandon old maps and spend time on new ones. How long should a map stay in rotation? 6 months, a year, etc. You know, I was actually thinking about this because this was an age-old debate back in Quake 3, when still to this day, if a Quake 3 tournament was held tomorrow, Q3 DM6 would be one of the maps, like, in the pool. Like, it just, it's sort of a standard map. It's been used forever. And because of that, anyone who has played Quake 3 for, like, an extended period of time automatically has this, like, special affinity with the map. It makes it very difficult for new players to come in, even if they're good, if they're, like, raw, like, straight-up raw talent, to still be so far behind because they haven't played 30,000 games on Q3 DM6.
But,
so,
like...
What?
That said, like, who cares about the lower level player in a tournament?
Like, well, I'm not necessarily. Well, I mean, I'm saying over time, right? Like, let's say 5 years from now, the new era of StarCraft II talent is trying to be ushered in, but we're still playing Metalopolis, and so any player that's been around for those 5 years, even if this is like the best up and coming RTS player. The argument is basically that does that give it an automatic disadvantage because we're not rotating the maps? So that's question number one. And then question number two, or perspective, right? Question number two is, you know, I always thought that one of the coolest things that could ever happen to a game like Quake would be if, like, all of a sudden they could, like, randomize a fucking map. If they could be like, this is the grand finals, game 5, and we're like hitting a button. It's like, boom, the map is randomized. And then suddenly, a player is not only sort of represented by their aim, by their decisions, by their, you know, their tactical approach to the game, but then all of a sudden, they're also having to learn a new skill, which is like instant adaptation. So, hypothetically speaking, if we could create the perfect random map generator, would that be a best case scenario to, like, always put the true skill per se of a player, like, you know, out on the field? Just throwing that out there. This is from the mailbag, so I like this one.
Well, I wouldn't be for it. I'm not quite sure if that's just because I'm a tried and true, you know, for over half my life I've been playing StarCraft 2. Maps and map pools are really important to StarCraft 2 in StarCraft. So if I win the first match, that's a much better position than having to be on your heels in the best of 3 or best of 5 where you lose the first match. So picking your map, eliminating maps, that's all really important. Putting it to a random generator always adds a luck factor to that, and StarCraft players in general want to move away from luck. It's going to be a part of it, but you want to try to move away from policies that encourage luck. I would just be the old fart who's like, no, I don't like that. I want to do
okay,
how we do
let
it.
Let me update this idea. Let's say that, like, a competition like MLG comes up, right? And instead of keep in mind, guys, this is the perfect random map generator. Like, this doesn't produce bad maps. You're like, oh my God, this map is great. We should play it. It's that good, hypothetically speaking. Instead of it being like, okay, on the fly, Jeff, we're randomizing this map for your matchup. Instead, it's like, at the beginning of the competition, here is the random map that's generated. And this is going to be used during the duration of the competition. Does that change it at all? Does that take some of the luck out of it?
What do you guys think about a player-organized map committee where the players, and I don't know how you could, like, control who's in it and who isn't, but top level players determine the maps and voting maybe from the public. And I definitely think we should have a system where a few new maps are integrated over time just to keep things fresh, and then also maps play such a huge role in StarCraft 2, you know, balance. Like, there's certain maps where you have to contour. Crossfire is a perfect example of a map where you really have to contour your strategy based on the map. So I really like maps like that, not Crossfire in specific. I don't really like that map, but I like maps that throw something new into the mix that kind of changes the norm of gameplay.
Sure.
And I think we need a system where, like, we rotate in a few of those, but we also keep the, you know, tried and true staple maps that people are really familiar with and kind of cycle in new staple maps as well. But I think it has to be player-owned and player-controlled in a way. And right now it's like you have all these different organizations just, like, plugging and pulling maps and creating their own maps, and there's really not a lot of testing that goes into it as far as balance is concerned. Sure. And, you know, I don't know who the map makers necessarily are or whether or not they even have competitive experience, which I think also makes a huge difference. A map could look really cool, but it could have, like, small little nuances that really change it. So I think at some point the players need to come together. If it gets to the point where, like, each tournament has a completely different set of maps and they're totally different and you're having to practice all these different maps. So I would love to see, like, a standard player-owned set of maps that we like, that we want to use.
I'd agree with that.
Do you guys think that's, like, a legit possibility?
I do. But in order to get these maps, like, as balanced as possible, you need to have, like, a huge, 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 like, amount of people to do that. As you said, you want it to be, like, player-owned. I think you'd have to get, like, every player, and also have, if you give certain players too much power and, like, other players don't dare to stand up to them on their map, you know, what if they made it too biased for their race or whatever? I don't know.
Let's have you played Cloud Kingdom before?
Yes.
So that one seemed to be picked up pretty quickly in sort of several leagues. You know, do you think that one went through, like, the extensive playtesting that you're suggesting has to be done?
I have no idea. I never heard of it until it got introduced into tournaments, you know. I've been recently playing it a lot, and I noticed that it's kind of better for certain races. Not by a huge extent, but I really have no idea how, like, these maps are made or who by, like Payne User said. I've really no idea about the map-making process in general. And yeah, I have no idea what, like, they're really looking for. Are they looking to make the maps as entertaining as possible for the viewers or as fair as possible for the players? I don't know.
I mean, I think that you've got to have a combination of both, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. So,
anyway.
I think that, you know, well, if we kind of look at Brood War, for instance, and I know Jeff knows what I'm talking about, the versions of Medusa where there were 10 temples stacked on top of one another, and then some of the maps that had, you know, eggs and Dark Swarm blocking, like, specific portions of the map, I think we've still really yet to explore some of the cool stuff that could be done with the map editor in StarCraft 2, and we haven't...
Yep, like pre-placed creep, man.
Yeah, pre-placed creep tumors on the islands to block the expansions there. I think that's actually mainly to block Terran from floating a super early CC over to the island. But anyway, I think there's a lot of really cool stuff that would make very unique maps and would change gameplay pretty drastically that map makers really aren't exploring yet. I don't know if it's because they're afraid or... a lot of the maps we see, it's like really similar. It's very difficult to make any kind of headway in the map making process as far as really unique stuff. All the maps sort of follow this template that was set in the Brood War era for, you know, the most fair logical progression on the map. You know, it's, you got your main, your natural. There's a relatively easy third nearby that you can take, and all the maps are very similar. It's kind of hard to really do something unique there.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the first maps that kind of, like, disobeyed that was Crevasse having the X-ray in the back, and everybody was like, wow, this is actually pretty cool, you know? Like, may not necessarily be the most fair map, but it was pretty cool to have around for a while. And also, the way that you said stuff's blocking, like, the eggs, and then you have, like, the Arbiter flying above and stuff. Every expo that's blocked, it's always blocked by rocks, either the path to get to the expo or the expo itself. And I feel they could vary up some stuff and just make it more interesting, you know?
Sure. Well, let's go to the phones, guys. You get down with that?
Anyone? Sounds good.
Project? Yeah, sure.
All right.
Yeah, no problem.
As always, Skype us, DJ Wheat, telephone 909-581-8519. Already the guys were starting to stack up and, you know, was trying to get in as quickly as possible. So you can telephone. Also, just wanted to, as we're in this little... thank our sponsors, SteelSeries and Sixpool Gaming, for continuously supporting us and allowing us to do the show. We really do appreciate it out there. And we had some questions about maps just a moment ago, and this guy actually knows quite a bit. So let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, we got Diamond on inside the game. What's up, man? How's it going?
How's it going, guys?
Dustin, what's up, man? Oh, good to see you. Good to hear from you.
Can you hear me all right? Or
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, I just heard you guys talking about maps. And I thought maybe I could help answer some of those questions you guys don't know, in particular with, like, how we create maps or why we haven't pushed certain boundaries.
Sure.
As far as the creation of maps...
Actually, firstly, you answer the question about Cloud Kingdom.
Sure. What was the question?
Well, the question was, like, we were just kind of saying that, you know, DeMuslim was saying that sometimes we feel like maps would take a lot of, you know, testing and you know, doing things properly, and I'm sure certain space and chokes not being this big and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Cloud Kingdom is one of those maps that I feel like it really just kind of, like, hit the scene and seemed to be pretty accepted. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the history of that map, because that might help us all understand...
Sure.
How about
Cloud Kingdom was created. The normal creation process, we go through a team, we discuss it as a complete team, and we make the map as the first version before we start passing it off to the pros. With Cloud Kingdom in particular, that was one I happened to miss a lot of the production on. I was doing other stuff. But when I first saw it, I realized we have a really good potential map here, and I brought it to all the Korean pros. I interfaced directly with Koreans for map feedback. And I said, what do you guys think about this? Is there any major complaints? Is there anything you can see that needs to be changed? And that's what we always do. And that was one of the first maps where nobody, aside for the fog, which we did change, they said the fog was hard on eyes. We found no Koreans that could come to a complaint with that. So we put it into the Korean Weekly to see what would happen. And that was probably the most untested map I've ever put into a Korean Weekly. And it's just one of those maps that came out really good right off the start. I think there is some small changes to be made once we have some more games on it. But there's no major flaws I've been able to see yet in the map, and the stats are coming out surprisingly good on it as well.
Okay. So, I mean, really, it's the team put together, development, feedback, and then ultimately implementation. But I kind of get the sense that there's a little bit of a roll of a dice there.
There is a little bit of a roll of dice, and the problem is right now getting testing. We can't just go to all the North American pros or just all the Korean pros and say, here, put out 500 games on this new map and tell us what you think. We sort of have to implement it trial by fire. I mean, and that's been the whole thing the whole way around. But if you look, that's no different than a Blizzard map going into a pool. Like, say, in Toon Valley, you take that's now an MLG. I don't think anybody believes Blizzard has very strict and stringent testing processes with their maps.
I don't like that map either.
I'm pretty sure Blizzard just throws it in their internal map-making team, and they come out with it. I don't know. You guys are the pros. Have you ever been consulted on Blizzard maps?
Have any of you guys ever?
I've been consulted on balance, but never maps.
What if tomorrow you got a phone call and they said, hey, guys, we really realize the error in our ways. We want you guys... to play test the shit out of these new maps before we release them for Season 5. Would you guys go for something like that?
I don't think a lot of players would really be interested, to be honest.
DeMuslim?
It's a lot of time.
If I could help out by just lending an hour of my time to, like, maybe give my 2 cents on the maps that they provided me, then sure, I'd be down for doing that, yeah.
Jeff?
Right, and that's what we...
Well, hold on, Diamond.
I want to hear
what Jeff has. Yeah.
I mean, the biggest issue is time. That's one of the most valuable resources for a pro gamer. So is it worth our time to consult with Blizzard for an hour? Yeah, I would say so. But would it be worth our time if they're like, here's a map, I need you to write up a blog, I need you to play 20 games on it, and then I want you to be available for Skype calls?
Okay.
I would ask, what does that pay?
Right. But there is some importance to that. So let me just ask a question to these guys, right? Because you guys have to play on the maps. Maybe there could be a committee that it doesn't consist of pro players, but who is that? Are those people out there?
And one thing on that committee in particular that really struck me is the player, I think, not in the player committee is obviously the best option. But right now, I don't think we're in the right place for it. If we still had a pro player committee, I feel that maps would be severely far behind. You remember there was a certain point where I had pros arguing against me for the removal of Steps of War for a long, long time until we put some new maps out. We said, here, look at how much better the game plays when you go on these maps. And that's what started the slow revolution. Everybody going, oh, yeah, it's probably not a great map. The pros want to practice or use what they've practiced. And for the most part, I mean, there's occasionally, like, In Control personally has been a big help in shooting out feedback to us, EG as a whole. Most pros don't want to do that. So all we can do is bring them to these guys and say, look at it and tell me what do you think when you look at it. Occasionally, a couple of them, for example, I know Gumio from FXO likes testing out maps, so he'll go and I can publish them on Korea and he'll put in some games on them. But right
so
now,
it's not like
not
a committee of bronzer sitting around and being like, okay, that's great, guys, let's do it. Like,
right,
oh,
and,
add some more rocks here. Let's.
One thing that's also, and this is not unique to us, if you look at even like the GSL map makers, how they test their maps is they go into the PlayXP channel, and for the viewers that don't know, PlayXP is a lot like the Team Liquid of Korea. So it's a very busy channel. And they get random people from there that are normally diamond level, sometimes masters. And that's what they use to test their maps. Just random people are sitting in the PlayXP channel. So there's no map making team on the planet that has the proper testing. Even us, we do our best.
Right.
And I think we have the best process. But as far as are these maps highly tested, not really. But are Blizzard maps highly tested?
Probably
not really. And everybody doesn't have a problem with them being thrown in an MLG or a IPL or whatever it may be.
Sure. All right. Mm. Well, well, sir, thank you very much for your comments. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Dude.
Good to get some
insight.
Yeah, it
was nice talking to you.
And, have a good day, guys.
Yep, have a good one. Take care. So there's a little bit of insight, I guess. I don't know that we'll be there. It's going to take us a while.
Dropping map-making knowledge bombs.
It's definitely going to take us a little while, huh? Take a telephone call. We got area code 253 on the phone. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Hello.
Hi. I just had a question about StarCraft in Korea, and since NBC Game, the tournament they had there for Brood War and all that is gone, do you think that MLG could replace the NBC Game MSL as like the tournament that Koreans go to compete in, and yeah, is that plausible?
I don't know that anyone has sort of achieved the scale of the competition that they threw, of the league that they threw, quite yet. I mean, I'll let it over to the host's thoughts. Pain user. You're shaking your head.
I don't think
so.
It's even close.
Yeah.
To the same level. I mean, it's not a bad question. It could certainly become the biggest foreign tournament for Koreans. Right now, it's kind of like, it's weird what's going on in the North American scene. It's like all the tournaments are kind of like vying over who can put out the biggest prize pool and who can treat the Koreans the best, you know? It's like all expenses played, you know, fly out from Korea, you know, we need this player, this player, this player. So, you know, MLG could certainly become the go-to destination for foreign tournaments, but at the end of the day, there's always going to be a niche market for a local homegrown corporation that runs tournaments in Korea. Whether it's NBC Game or GOM or, you know, whatever, there's going to be a local Korean organization that's huge that I don't think foreign tournaments will be able to compete with unless like all the tournaments just somehow unify under one body, but I don't see that happening.
Well, Jeff, you are into the Brood War scene, so this tournament like definitely means something to you. I mean, is it almost silly to even think that the two could be compared, or?
I would like to think that MLG or GOM could eventually grow to be where NBC took it, and OSL, MSL, those tournaments, they had 20,000 people stacked outside. You know, they had concerts going on before the major events. They had television channels in Korea that were just purely running StarCraft Brood War. So they did really amazing things. I mean, it's a fun question to speculate on, but there's a lot between now and then, to be honest with you. And it was the same for Brood War as well. The game didn't just, like, come out and then a week later it was on TV and everyone was watching it. It grew up to that level, and we have to do the same thing.
All right. Well, caller, hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
You too.
And big shout out to his mom for letting him, you know, use the phone. And dial up.
Big shout out to
what? You guys are so mean. Oh my gosh. Why are you so mean to the callers all the time? Fuck. All the time. God, it's supposed to be glitter and stuff, and your guys are all mean.
What's up, bitches? This
you are so mean, you guys. All right, well, we'll be nice to this next guy. Ladies and gentlemen, Willem.
Call us back when your balls drop.
Willem, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up?
Sorry, I've got speakers and my mic on.
Oh, okay. So turn the speakers off.
No, the speakers are good. It was just the stream was still on, and I could hear.
Gotcha,
anyway,
gotcha.
The echo thing. I wanted to kind of return to the Stefano incident,
okay.
If you guys don't mind for a minute. I think the kid obviously loves the game, like the Muslim was saying. Like, he's obviously putting in more than 3-4 hours a day. But I think he's also one of the best players, if not the best, outside of Korea. And I mean, I don't think it matters that... Fuck, how can I put this? What he did was obviously unacceptable to us. Because we participate in the community, because we all frequent Team Liquid, because sure. We all frequent Reddit. Well, I don't know if you guys frequent Reddit, but whatever. But, I mean, does it really matter in the grand scheme of things? I think Stefano is a realist, is what I'm trying to say. That he understands the fact that a few years down the line, his prowess in StarCraft II really doesn't matter. Like, he's making as much money as he can.
Then wouldn't he like opt to just play the games and get second place at least to have that money? Versus taking the punishment of fourth?
Well, I think that his haste in logging off last night? Whenever he did it, whenever the ONOG thing was, I mean, he was expecting to make $750. I believe was the second place prize for that tournament as well. Earlier that day, he had won that tournament against Grubby.
Hold on one second, Jeff. I gotta go to In Control. Jeff, it seems like you've got something that you want to respond with.
He's brewing. He's brewing on a thought. It's brewing.
I'm trying to just like. Are you trying to make the argument that because he knows that down the road StarCraft II isn't going to matter in his famously successful Dr. Korea in France, that if he gets tired, he doesn't have to give a shit because it's small beans for later in life? Is that what you're trying to say? And he's like so wise and a realist that he just gets it?
Well, no, I don't think it's like wisdom. I think he's obviously being pretty arrogant about the whole situation. I think it's kind of a dick move. I mean, I know that I stayed up because I wanted to watch him play in the ONOG finals. I was like, fuck yeah, Stefano versus Cass, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to stay up and watch it. And
so
then
what are you saying then? Like, we shouldn't be mad at him because he's just a realist and we can't judge him for that?
No, I'm trying to bring a different perspective to the board that, you know, if I hadn't called in right now or if this show didn't exist, like, I mean, if the whole community didn't exist,
then it would have been a non-issue. Right. It's like it's sort of out of sight, out of mind type of thing.
Nobody's calling for corporal punishment. Like, nobody's offering to extend a knee for him to bend over and get spanked by. Like, there is a community. There is competition.
Yeah, you
20
can't.
Years from now, maybe I'm going to be the most forward-thinking mathematician. Okay? And StarCraft II plays no part in that. But that's then. This is now. We are in a competition. There is a league. I don't understand the perspective of like, well, like if you enter the Matrix and you remove, you unravel everything, what did he actually do?
I think you lost me, but what I was just trying to say is that Stefano is removed from the community. So in his mind, this didn't matter.
The decision only affected him.
Yeah.
Right. That was where when he was going through the consequences. I can actually understand and respect that because
wait, hold on,
it's
hold on.
No. Because let me put it in a different perspective, right? When I have to cancel a show, I feel guilty because, like, I'm really
because
like,
because you're
God.
Involved in the community. Because you're
I know.
A community guy.
I feel bad that I'm like, this is something we give it, you know. It could, but in all seriousness, like, it's possible that the decision is made for himself. And
wait. But regardless of our perception of how involved Stefano is in the community or his perception of how involved he is in the community, he's involved in the community. He's a part of it.
Am I the only person that didn't smoke weed? Are we really pretending that the world exists based on our own perspective? Like, Greg leaves a fucking game that he has won or is leading. We're in furious because it's like, that's stupid. You should have stayed in the game and played it out. And he goes, well, from my perspective, I was defeated because if he was playing perfectly, he wouldn't have made any mistakes and I would have lost. That's not how the world works. So Stefano, his perspective, he's detached from the community. Sure, I guess if we evaluated the world based upon our own, our physical own experience, like if our world extended a millimeter off our bodies, then yeah, that's great. But it doesn't. So what are we talking about?
No, I'm 100% with you. That's what I was just saying. Like, don't worry, I'm on board.
Right on.
I'm with you. Same
it's
team.
It's just a different perspective. I guess we'll have to leave it at that. Are we? Is that the Muslim? No.
No. I'm just giggling.
Bugger.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Hey,
we...
thank you, man. Thank you. Have
man.
A good one, Willow.
See you guys.
Appreciate it.
See ya.
Yeah.
That was a little weird, man.
Well, no, I don't know what his. I know he was trying to bring a different point of view into the conversation, but I have no idea what that point of view was. Like, I'm still completely lost on, like, what...
I think that he is a very diehard Stefano fan.
Well, Jeff got it, like, smack on that, like, well, in 20 years' time, like, Stefano would just be like, oh, well, I made that decision for a reason, whatever, it hasn't affected me now. Like, Jeff hit it on the head, but the guy was then like, no. And then it was like, everything was then lost kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, the best argument he could have made is that Stefano doesn't really follow the forums. He doesn't care about people. So when he feels tired and he thinks he can't play his best, it makes sense for him personally to be like, I'm not going to play because all I care about is what I think. But I would have, like, to have that argument, it would be he's armed with a toothbrush and I have a battle axe. Like, I'm like, let's go to war on that subject, please. If we worked through this community with the strange perspective of, well, he just did that because according to his selfish, you know, self-centered image, that's okay, then what is anything? Like, why are we on a show?
Yeah, that's, I mean,
I'm
yeah,
just
that's,
one guy, right? Like, you all have your own opinions too, but that's not the way the world works, so I don't know.
That's exactly what I was saying. Like, regardless of our perception of, like, how involved he is in the community or his perception, it doesn't matter. He is. So, like, that whole scenario of discussion just doesn't exist. Like, there's no.
All right. Let's take the blue pill and move on. I think this guy wants to talk a little bit of strategy. That'd be a little different. There we go. We've got Matt on the line. Hello, Matt. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? First, I want to tell InControl to look at the chat because he's getting mad props from the chat. So I just want him to see that and feel good for being the
savior of that call,
the voice of reason in that situation.
Thank you.
I have a question about PVT. Let's steer it in the eyes of strategy here.
This works good tonight, actually.
I'm a Masters level Protoss player, and I'm feeling a little too bassy. And the reason I say that is because I've been watching a lot of, tournaments, GSL, that kind of thing. And I'm not finding an easy, safe way to go from 2-base to 3-base against a Terran that is not feeling 2-base Colossus-y. You know what I mean? Like, really reliant on a big, 4 Colossus push I was just wondering what you got, your guys' thoughts was on that kind of thing.
Wait.
Maybe my question would be, what do you think is the best way to get onto three bases against a Terran player without being semi-all-in with a Colossus push?
Jeff? I mean, obviously, initially this question directed to you. What question do you have?
I think it's really in vogue right now to go beyond two bases. Protoss vs. Terran feels pretty strong right now for the Protoss players. Like, a lot of Protoss players are figuring out that they can limit how many Colossus they make. They don't have to have 17 Colossus. They can just have 3. And then they can switch to Templar off a 2.5 base as they transition to 3 base. And then there's a lot of double forge opening. So Protoss players are leaving their Stalkers in their main to handle drops. They're being smarter with controlling of the towers. They're using observers to spot for armies. And they're either getting blink or charge and playing to that. Like, they're playing map control style. Also, the Warp Prism has made an appearance. So if you're able to use the Warp Prism against a Terran player, they feel very uncomfortable moving out. And then you can sneak in a third base as you delay their push out or do severe damage to their economy if you have really good control as well. There's lots of different options. There's also players that are opening Storm first, and you can either do a two-base push with that, like I think it was Puzzle that was doing that for a while, or Sage, one of those two. And it's actually bled over into non-Kreen gameplay as well. But from there, because your AoE units, the Templar, are so mineral light and gas heavy, it allows you to have a lot of excess resources to go ahead and take a faster third base. But also, as I do another tack on, a lot of Terran players are opening up blind Viking, or at least not Ghost. Like, Ghost pushes are not happening anymore. So if you go Storm first, you're more often than not going to catch a Terran that actually misappropriated the resources, and they're not properly in position to handle Templar first. So you're able to use that buffer to take a third and then transition into Colossus.
Right. Okay, I guess, if I can hear the Muslim and Pain user talk about maybe, like, how a Protoss can get to a third base without Colossi, and the ways that maybe they can, like, you know, sneak an easy win in against Storm, and then maybe the way that they can't. Just maybe the best way to get to the third base, because I know that obviously almost all...
You mean to stop you from getting to a third base?
Right. Okay, to stop the Protoss. Okay. Because I know that a lot of Terran versus Protoss revolves around, like, you know, a two-base timing to stop a third base.
Let's see what they got to say.
Okay.
Well, I'll go first. First of all, I find it insanely hard to prevent a third base unless I'm doing an insane all-in, which usually gets stopped anyway. The main thing that I try to do against the Protoss is split him up so I'm harassed. Like, given that he does get three bases, that gives me three bases to harass, potentially, with drops and such. So, personally, that's what I'll try and do, given that I know I can't really prevent the third from going up, like, by directly all-inning him or something. And the reason that I can't just prevent him from doing that is given one of the most recent patch changes was making upgrades cheaper. And even without that patch happening, Protosses were starting to adjust anyway. And it's all about getting a little lead for, even if it's only like a lead for about a minute or two in game time, that's enough for you to really secure that third. And that's what Protosses have really started doing. They've just had like an upgrade lead for a certain length of time, but that's enough to really get your third base down. And that's what I think you should really be taking advantage of. And that's pretty much all I have to say on it. I don't know how Taylor feels.
I kind of feel the same way. Like, if my approach would be different, because I'm sort of like a passive macro player in a way. I guess that's just the best way to generally describe my play style. So I would probably try and get my third up before them, and maybe let them have it in a situation where I get my orbital up, say, in my main or at my third well before their Nexus actually finishes. So I'm still ahead in that regard. But as far as straight up denying the third, your only real option as a Terran player is kind of what DeMuslim was saying. Like, you can use the main portion of your army to try and pull the Toss army away from his third, and then maybe you can sneak in with a handful of Marines and Marauders and try and pick off the Nexus, or do a drop at the third while his army is away from the third. But the odds that you're actually going to kill the Nexus or completely shut it down are pretty low if it's a really good player, because he's going to have his army
probably positioned between his natural and his third in a pretty good defensive spot, and he'll probably have stalkers at his main too to help deal with drops there. So as far as like to help you in your specific situation, I would just say keep your army in a really good spot where you can react to what the Terran's going to try and do to you, because what DeMuslim was saying about when you go to three base, there's three different spots for him to harass. So Terran players are going to go into like a crazy harass mode where they're going to try and do a lot of damage to you and drop different points at the same time. So you need to go into a mode where you have your units split in the proper places, and you need to just absorb anything that he throws at you and then hopefully come out ahead without taking that much damage. So okay, it's just like a really meticulous thing, getting your third. Just be really careful and keep your army in good spots.
Okay, I have a quick question for Pain User on that, really quick.
Okay,
really. So there's this weird timing that, like, okay, so you say that you get, you know, ahead economically by getting that third base a good deal earlier, and that's kind of where part of my question, you know, takes its home, because there is that time where, like, a third can go up pretty easily for the Terran player in the safety of his natural and just float it, you know, to the third or to the gold. So, and I feel like that time for a Protoss, let's say I'm trying to defend with Colossus, because, you know, I have a really hard time doing it just with gateway units or gateway units and immortals. Mm-hmm. So that time falls like a couple of minutes later.
What's the question?
What's the question exactly?
So the question is, should I just try to force Uber late game if I'm getting my third up later against that strategy?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, you want to play towards the late game against Terran. Absolutely. I feel, you know, if you have a couple Colossus in your mix and you're able to transition without losing to Templar, you're in a pretty good spot if you have really good upgrades too in the late game. But that's generally the approach Protoss players take, is like a slow, really safe, meticulous style against Terran. And if you want, you can throw in a little bit of flair. You can get a warp prism, harass mineral lines with zealots, stuff like that. But for the most part, you're kind of absorbing what he's throwing at you and trying to work your way into the late game where you have a ridiculous amount of gateways and your economy's pretty solid. So yeah, I mean, I don't think trying to take it to the late game against Terran is a bad strategy at all. But it shouldn't just be like you're... That shouldn't be the objective of PVT for you. I don't think that's like a good all-around game plan to go for a specific time of the game. You just want to slowly take bases safely to the best of your ability.
You want to make the Terran react to what you're doing, not the other way around. Like, Protoss always has to be thinking about when he gets that third base up or fourth base even. Like, you shouldn't be playing a reactionary style to him. Like, he has to counter you. You know, if you make Colossus, he has to make Vikings. If you then switch to High Templar, he has to make Ghosts. You have to think like that. Like, you're leading the game. You shouldn't be reacting to what he's doing.
All right. Thanks,
Sounds good,
Matt.
Love the show.
Thanks, sir. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah,
I'm glad that the Muslim saved that entire call with, like, the final 30 seconds of his just, like, look, man.
This guy.
Let me tell you how it is.
This fucking guy.
All right. Let's try area code 512. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good.
Oh my God, is that our first female caller ever?
Less calls every week, man.
I think it might be.
No, I'm just kidding. Hello.
So my question was, what's y'all's opinion on, like, a governing body for StarCraft or for esports? Do you think it's necessary or feasible? And, I mean, besides Artosis.
Governing over what? Over the players? Over tournaments?
Like, players and tournaments? I don't know. I've just seen a lot on, like, you know, Reddit and Team Liquid talking about, you know, like, the nanny law situation, or, like, y'all were discussing the Stefano situation, and I guess just things that tend to piss off the community or piss off tournaments, and, you know, how do you deal with that on a large scale?
So, like, a players' union?
Yeah. Jeff, got it. I heard the words about to come out of Jeff's mouth. Let's see what he says to say about this.
It is potentially, and in a perfect world, it would be absolutely an awesome, beneficial, good thing for everybody involved. It'd be a body of accountability, so if someone wrongs a player or a player wrongs someone, either way, because there's a governing force, there's something you can appeal to have justice, to make things better for the future and to set examples. What could end up happening is that, where it's this great thing that leagues can go to, they're bound to work with, and players feel like they have a voice. So it's furthering the causes and the benefits of everybody. Or there's this other side where people don't really regard it as legitimate. It's not treated as legitimate, and a bunch of tryhards try to force it on people, and then it just gets to be like an embarrassing attempt at legitimacy. So, like I said, if leagues were willing to play ball, if teams were okay with it, and if players were motivated enough, then it would be a great thing. But that's a lot of infrastructure that,
sure.
Quite frankly, esports in general, but specifically what I know, StarCraft II, has a really tough time with. How many times do the most basic, gargantuan, stupid snafus happen to some of the biggest companies involved in StarCraft II? If you're going to ask players to take time, like, the other side of this too is the way a player makes money is directly related to success, marketing, and like their legitimacy, right? So to give themselves the opportunity to be made vulnerable by attaching their name to something that's really ambitious, but then also to dedicate time and energy and money towards something like that is a huge risk. So I don't see anyone stepping forward and being like, I'm the person who's going to potentially sacrifice my livelihood for the benefit of everybody. It would be hard to see that happening.
So I just want to throw out a couple things here because this is a great time. If you ever watch Live on 3, which is tomorrow night, we like to talk a lot about the history of esports and, you know, sometimes mistakes and successes so that we don't get steered the wrong way. I want to point out a few examples just so that people know that this has been tried before, and it's a very difficult thing, like In Control had said. You know, it's hard to then go to these competing businesses, NASL, IPL, MLG, DreamHack, etc., because can really all these conform if it means, you know, taking away the way that one entity makes money or holds a competition? Anyway, let's go on. And discuss a couple of these. The first one is the UKESA, the United Kingdom Esports Association. They were founded on the 31st of October 2008. You can find this article on Wikipedia. If you go down to the history at the bottom, you'll see that in December 2009, amid controversy, the UKESA signed for bankruptcy and has since made no attempt to pay back any individual organization it owned. That was a year. Right? Like, this is just one example. There were some really smart guys on this thing. But it became an issue of politics. It became sort of an issue of, should this governing body have all the power? We've had the G7 in the past. The G7 was widely regarded as a joke. Only, you know, really had the greatest intentions, but just never did anything that the public face saw. There's also the International Esports Federation. That was founded by 9 national esports associations on August 11th of 2008, and I'm not even sure, like, who they actually are. History? Yeah, there's not much history about the IES. I guess I should look it up. But the point being is that, like, this has really been tempted before. Actually, the IESF looks like it is still very much active, so... someone seems to be at least trying this. It's just a hard thing. Like, how do you get these companies to go, yeah, you know what? This seems like a good part of our business plan, that we're going to conform to, like, the same rules as this, you know? Or, I mean, that's a rough call.
So those are the challenges. I would love it if someone would step forward. It's just we have to recognize that it's going to be really hard, and its past is really spotty. So to your point, it would be good, and I hope someone does try it.
Now, you would need someone like a community figure that's really well trusted as well to spearhead the whole thing, I think. Like, really trusted by the players and just by the community in general. Somebody who's maybe had experience managing stuff in the community before? I don't know. But it would just be so hard to get all the players to, like, sign up and be committed to something like that. And I don't know. It's interesting. I think that we're coming to the point now where it's sort of necessary to have something like that. Maybe not right now, but certainly in the near future as, you know, this whole thing gets bigger. But I don't know. How do you guys think it's going to play out? Do you think that'll happen anytime soon, in the next couple of years? Some sort of like a governing player body or a players association?
I could see at least being attempted. could see it being attempted.
Attempted is a good word to, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. It's real tough.
I mean, with all this stuff that happens every day, it's hard to imagine that we just don't, like, someone isn't stepping up. But who is that person going to be? Who is that organization that's going to be? And then do they have the clout? Do they have the pull? Do they have the charisma to then, to like, tie it all together? I think it's an impossible task. Like, someone would literally have to dedicate everything that they've got to something like that to make it work.
Yeah.
And then at that point, like, what do they get out of it? It seems so right in so many ways, but it's like, how does it happen? I have no freaking clue. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Right. Thanks for taking my call.
Have a good night. Bye-bye. I think we might have to take our final caller now.
All right. I'm always up for that. I haven't heard
prepared?
His pleasant voice in quite some time.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the one, the only... Goat Lust, welcome to Inside the Game, buddy. What's up?
Oh, yeah? Not a whole lot.
Oh, whoa. The Muslim just got totally assaulted,
oh,
man.
Hey.
I'd go so far as to say that might have been inappropriate.
My bad.
That's okay.
Your ladies are, like, ready
That's
to go.
Okay. Everyone was like, "Ooh!" And then all the girls were like, "That bitch will burn. I'm going to," you know, because they're all, like, chasing you and stuff. Goat Lust, what's up? Sorry that a girl upstaged you there momentarily. Let's start over. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Goat Lust Inside the Game. What's up?
Yeah, not a lot, mate. Yeah, just thought I'd say welcome back to Pain User.
Hey,
it's
buddy.
Good to have him back.
It's good to hear your voice as well. How you been?
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
Well, this week I thought I'd ask a question which is sort of entertaining the idea that perhaps there could be a level of consistency that is required for, you know, StarCraft II to be successful going onwards into the future, like to give it more legitimacy, to have people be able to follow players more easily, and just like looking over where we've come from and where we've gone. We've had, you know, our starting era with Rain and Fruit Dealer and all those guys doing good and then dropping straight off. And then we had that relatively consistent time with MC, like Nesty and MVP all, you know, winning their tournaments with not much in between. And then it all became a lot more inconsistent after that, and, you know, we've had Lasira dropping down to Code B, people like Jarkji jumping up all the way to the finals, like, from nowhere. And I'm just wondering, like, going onwards, how do you think patches and expansions are going to affect, like, this aspect of the game in the long term? And do you think it's up to tournaments to have structures like, say, MLG, how they've got... their seeding carried over, you know, versus something where it's a bit more, it lends itself to inconsistency a bit more with the new fluctuation with the GSL structure.
Well, let me actually ask a question to the guys based off of all that. Do you think that the lack of consistency in a champion is a bad thing?
No. I mean, it's something totally natural. I mean... and StarCraft II is still so young that I'm kind of glad that we haven't really seen any, like, bourgeois yet or anything like that. And also, I feel like StarCraft II is, as a whole, a much more volatile game than Brood War was. It's not even close to as figured out. You know, not nearly as much time has been put into figuring out, like, the best macro builds possible. Although, you know, we're getting there. People are making a lot of headway, but... the game in general is just so hectic. I mean, you make one wrong click in StarCraft II, or you're out of position just a little bit, and battles are over so quickly, and damage is done so rapidly, and the units have such high DPS that anything can happen, especially in a best of, you know, three series over the course of a tournament. And I feel like a lot of players up at the top, even the mid-tier, have the capability to knock anyone out in a set of games. And, you know...
so. Well, let me ask the same question then to the Muslim and in control. Do you think that a lack of consistency is a bad thing?
I'll let Jeff go first.
I just think it's a natural thing. Like I.
So you.
This is the beginning of StarCraft II. It is still being patched. New strategies are still being figured out. like, a lot of the best players at the beginning of the beta and even now are actually old Brood War players. We haven't even had the big Brood War players transition over yet. Like, there's a lot of things in flux that usually get evened out, not after 1, 2, 3, 4 years, but rather, like, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So I think it's natural. And it's acceptable, by the way. There's some games that have such huge, huge, like, incredible inconsistencies that it's actually a problem. Like, the day where, you know, a guy was like, I was bronze, and then a month later he's like, yeah, I feel like, you know, in the GSL is pretty okay, but, like, when they make that jump, we have problems. But for right now, it's acceptable, in my opinion.
I mean, is the logic, I'll ask the Muzzle this question, is this logic fair, that inconsistency shows a growing player base and, quite frankly, like, a growing talent pool?
Well, just to answer the one before first, like, I think inconsistency is a good thing. It means that, like, you get to see everybody and, like, not everybody jumps on the same boat. I also think that the casters themselves got a lot of, like, backing from the community, which is really good. Really good spokespeople drawing people in, so that was a really big thing, rather than just the players doing it because they liked the way he played, you know? Mm-hmm. So that meant that people could really kind of connect with the casters, their voice, their talking about the game, how much they love it and stuff, and I think that was really important. And the question you were just asked now, could you repeat it?
Yeah, basically, is inconsistency a result of more players, more talent, you know, more people playing the game, which makes it harder to get through some of these tournaments, these brackets, et cetera, et cetera?
I think, yeah, that, like, inconsistency in a new game is bound to happen. If you just had one guy just go Super Saiyan mode, you know, and just dominate everything, like, that would just meant everybody else wasn't really either trying or just wasn't up to par, or they were just lacking with, like, an extra hand. So I think this is bound to happen in a new game. And yeah, it's acceptable. I think it's worked out really well in StarCraft 2. And you've seen people such as MVP that have gone on, like, a really good stint for a couple of months, you know, even as long as a year. But I think the fact that we haven't had one guy dominate, I think it just shows how competitive the game really is. And I'm liking it.
Right on. Any follow-ups to that, Goatlust?
Well, I'd just say, like, it's all right for, like, this first year or maybe two, but think how long it's going to be. You know, we're going to have Heart of the Swarm, then we're going to have this inconsistency with that, then we're going to have Legacy of the Void, and there's going to be, you know, all this time which strategy is going to have to develop between, like, after, you know, Legacy of the Void comes out. So do you think that people will get sick of the inconsistency in the scene compared to, like, something like Brood War, where Brood War came out, it had its patches, and then it was let to develop on its own?
Inconsistency is only bad for the hyper-competitive players who believe the best person should win every single time, and the best people should be present every single time. Inconsistency is exciting for observers because there's always the possibility. It's also exciting for people playing the game because they feel like they have a sense of hope that eventually they could raise to a level or the right set of circumstances could occur where they're winning major tournaments or doing really well for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever find a game that's just raw mathematics and just purely the best player wins every single time, tell Greg, first and foremost. He'd be thrilled to hear about that. But chances are it's not going to be a hugely widespread fanfare for all the people watching because the outcome is predetermined.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of how it ended up with Flash at some of those stages, didn't it? And it sort of took a bit
Flash
of the excitement
player?
Out of it.
You mean Flash the Brood War player?
I think it did.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it didn't. Because he was one pseudo-perfect player amongst a sea of imperfect players. So there was still a lot of tournaments where he got dropped out because of really cool cheeses and crazy strategies, and it was always a storyline that he was actually overcoming a lot of crazy cheeses and unpredictability stuff. But if he was facing, like, even Flash and Jadong in their height, it still produced amazing matches, not because, well, I mean, at the end of the day, they both weren't perfect players. They actually had on-and-off tournaments, on-and-off days. They were pretty close to it, don't get me wrong, but it was exciting because there were inconsistencies. Jadong went through slumps. Flash didn't as much. But both of them still had their ups and downs.
And we're going to see that, you know, that history is going to change a lot. And I don't know that we'll ever see that dominant player. But I kind of look forward to that. Go ahead, Pain User.
One thing I kind of wanted to tack on was I happen to be pretty faithful, or hopeful, rather, that Blizzard development on the future expansions actually, I hope they're working to create less of that inconsistency, still while changing the game and providing like a new experience with each each subsequent expansion. But I really hope that even the new units that they add and like the changes to the game is overall helping with things that we've been complaining about with the specific races for a really long time, you know, help do something about the Protoss death ball, whether it's giving Protoss different options to, you know, create smaller subgroups or harass, or whether it's giving the other races options to deal with that. Like, I hope they really address some of the core issues, like, you know, units bunching together super tight and the AI being perfect. Maybe they can do something about that by implementing different types of units, but I hope that it overall and over the course of time just makes StarCraft II a much better game, as opposed to more chaotic and more hectic with all the different expansions. So I hope they do it right, but
yep.
I don't
I'm
know.
All
we'll
for the pursuit. Yeah. I just think it'd be unrealistic and defeatist to sit around and be like,
yeah,
it's inconsistent. This game's terrible. It's not going to be consistent.
All right, Goatless, we got to wrap things up pretty quickly, so thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we have gone over, so I am gonna keep the goodbyes to a very quick minimum. So we want to wrap this up. Pain User.
Thanks everybody for watching. Thanks guys for being on the show. Ben, it's good to talk to you again. Jeff, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Tell Anna the same for me. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I'd appreciate it. It's at Pain User on Twitter. Big shout outs to my team, Check Six, and our sponsors, TT Esports, Pure Track, and End of Reality. Huge shout outs to IPL and IGN. And I just wanted to touch on that super quick because tons of people have been asking me. I've been getting spammed on Team Liquid and on Twitter.